not at the last meeting to see. Now she is.
I'm happy to do that. I think it's going to take a lot more discussion and thought.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This is definitely a marathon, not a sprint.
And you maybe have learned not to use the word options for use, but options for protection.
I think that alone is a lesson. I had red flags about the way that was worded, and I should have spoken up last month, because our agenda items need to be reflective of, well, they don't need to be inciting the public.
Yes, excellent input. And let's do that going forward. Explore options for protection of surplus water. Do you have your hand raised, Pam?
Yeah, just as I recall, this is kind of a priority. Putting it into a protection perspective makes it a different priority. As we were discussing it in the water management plan as an option to bank or lease, we don't have all of the facts together yet. We're still exploring all of that. So it's not like the first tier. It's not something that we need to make a decision on. It's good to keep working on it, obviously, with Sue's expertise, for sure. But it's not like the highest priority of the things that we have on our priority list. I just wanted to make that comment.
Well, it's on the priority list because we'd be well advised to be prepared in that respect for what the future might bring. And again, we've, I think, done a good job of spreading the work out.
I just want to say that under Utah's water banking law, that if you bank your water, it's exempt from forfeiture. So there's a huge protection reason to do water bank. The other reason people are interested in water banking is to make a little bit of money so you can meter, we can talk about, like I said, this is an in-depth conversation to have.
Yes, and
probably a water attorney, not me. But, yeah.
And we will take our time with it, certainly. But again, it's not something I don't want to. It needs to stay on the table. I feel like we need to be prepared for what the future might bring.
John, this is Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi. So you'll see when you go through the results from our survey that it is in the top three, our water protection and protection of our soil source aquifers. Thank you.
Okay. Dave, did you have a comment?
Well, just that we're at the very beginning of this whole process, and we have to watch what the legislature is doing each year, because it's a very fluid and dynamic subject, to say the least. So, you know, we'd be remiss if we weren't keeping track of what's going on for everybody out there. But at the same time, there's no firm proposals. And from what we found out recently, it would seem that law might have to change before we were eligible to be able to do it down basin. In the basin, yes, but that's more cumbersome for us and maybe more difficult.
Yeah, again, it's a wide open book, and it hasn't been written yet.
As
Sue says, it's going to take a very in-depth discussion, probably for an extended period of time.
I wonder if it might be helpful to just, Sue, since you've worked on this, have maybe just like simply voice kind of what this idea would even entail, so people understand what the topic is. I think so, because we got that public comment. So I know people are maybe concerned that it might not play out.
In my opinion, and I need to learn a lot more, obviously I'm the new member here, I need to better understand really what are the goals of the community. And then we can look at options to either protect our water right, lease our water right for money, that type of stuff. So I'm not really prepared right now to talk about Utah water law, but it is legal now to keep your water in the river. Of course, we're an aquifer, so that's a little bit different. What I would suggest is either myself, which I hope I don't have to do a 10-minute presentation on what some options are, or we invite a water attorney to kind of look at our goals and give us some advice. But I have to better understand what our goals are.
I'm remembering it's an audio recording, and it involved a meeting in Oregon, Idaho, and Nevada. Emily Lewis was involved. This was years ago, but I'm remembering it had something like that. That we could connect to.
And Emily Lewis has given multiple presentations on what water banking does and how to do it. It's all on the Division of Water Resources website. She was hired by the state to put together 3 pilot programs. She got 2 done. 1 decided not to become a water bank. I've talked to Emily. She said she would come talk to us. She's no longer with Clyde and Snow, so I don't know who the town's water attorney is.
John Clyde.
Okay.
Who is this?
Emily Snow. Emily Lewis.
And she was the water attorney for which town?
She's the water. She worked for. I thought she was the town of Castle Valley's water attorney when I asked if we had one.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And when.
Well, she worked.
I think the answer to your question, to that question, is that when she worked for Clyde and Snow, she, the town worked with her. And and she was kind of, we worked with her as a underneath the senior Clyde. And when she left, we now work with young John Clyde, the son of, you know. So we have a connection in there. Emily Schneider, okay. Castle Valley, with several people at this meeting. That's a good start. And you say that Division of Natural Resources has prepared presentations on this topic?
Division of Water Resources.
Okay, Water Resources.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a great place for people to start, and perhaps we put a link on our website in regards to this. Because then instead of laymen speaking on the subject, we've really got the expert. Or one of the, and Emily, before she worked for Clyde and Snow, worked for the state engineer's office in Salt Lake City.
I think we can be pretty sure that whatever becomes available is going to be legally complicated. We're certainly going to want to have legal counsel. But I would start with what's available on the Division of Water Resources website. Could someone round up the links for those and send them to all of us?
Yes. Unless Sarah wants to. It's pretty easy. You just Google Division of Water.
Yes.
I know, but it's just really,
you know what you're looking
even
for.
Easier if I got a link to click.
Okay. Not a problem.
All right. I think we've settled item 7 then, and got a report in the process. Let's go to item 8, the Water Management Priority Action List, and we kind of framed this as executive reports, things that will be reported on monthly until resolved. I'll say the first 2 items can be deleted because they're redundant. The first items were redundant with the last, and the second item's redundant with the third. So we can go right to the third, if that's understood. Which is water rights, which is me. And I think I touched on it last meeting, but in this, my final year, remembering that I was brought into this position to manage water rights, my intention is to focus on water rights and particularly on enforcement. We've been lax in that respect. And I simply want to shore up as best I can, house, you know, the town has very limited options for enforcement, in that, the town's water rights are delivered through individual private wells. We can't go lock out those wells. We have to come up with other means to discourage people from, using town water rights, without permit, without them being valid, without the permission being valid. And so that's going to be a focus of mine. I've already organized the water rights to the town, the allocations of the town rights that currently exist in the groups. I'm going to actually write individual letters to people because I think many of them don't really understand the situation they're in. So I'm going to start by informing them and inviting them to take certain action to come into compliance. And we'll see what shakes out from that. And also I'm going to get with Cash and streamline the accounting between the town and the Division of Water Rights. It should be really simple. We just haven't, I asked Mark about this and we were in the process of talking about it when he left. So that's kind of what I have in mind for water rights. Any questions? Okay. Well, metering, which is kind of something that I've been having discussions with Egmont, and my role in this will transition to Sarah. I don't know if there's anything new to mention. We kind of have a chicken and egg situation of needing to know the cost of implementing metering and in order to, you know, establish a goal, a timeline goal. I mean, we want to have metering fully implemented in 5 years. How much will that cost per year? And we're still, I think, not ready to answer either question. But I think that with Sarah having, moving into her role, we will start to see, you know, have more discussions and start to drill down into some of the questions that need to be answered. Do you have anything to add, Sarah?
I don't yet. I mean, we have plans in the next month, the three of us, to get together to talk about the current state of water metering.
Right.
Where all the research that Egmont has already been doing is. Egmont's here. Do you want to?
Yeah, I was going to ask Egmont.
Anything you want to ask?
Where do I start? First of all, there are many options out there. So, I don't see any technical problems with the whole thing. Either way we are going, there is off-the-shelf stuff out there. We could do our homebrew stuff. There are solutions out there. So the question is how much enforcement is coming from the town to do that and to get people to have their wells metered. That might be the biggest issue. And when you take that to the end of the thought, not everybody will be signing up on it, so you want to have it in a way that can be easily implemented without any problems for the well owner. In other words, no major installation, no cutting plumbing, no cutting into electrical. That was the reasoning behind the thinking of, you know, doing a homebrew solution that might not be as accurate as off-the-shelf solutions that municipalities usually use, but that have much less impact on the well owner, and therefore we might have a better buy-in from well owners. So technically not a problem. I think it's more an issue of who is signing up for it, who's willing to do it, and what the town can do to kind of force it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I know one thing we could do pretty quickly, and the water use agreement and permit needs to be updated in a couple of other ways, but we can start requiring newly drilled wells to install it at the time of built, you know, constructing the well. That, of course, makes it much easier because it's part of the whole construction process. That would require an amendment to our agreement. But again, I got a couple of other amendments that need to be made, so that's due to happen anyway. But that'd be a good place to start, because once that's done, from that water rights, the rest is another discussion about how to. The important thing is as evidenced by that comment, public comment, that you know, things get out of hand in a hurry in terms of perception and rumor. And I think it needs to be emphasized whenever this topic comes up that Egmont has found very non-invasive ways to do this.
You're glitching again. We lost John.
But I don't know what's going on here. Anyway, I just want to emphasize, whenever you're having this discussion with somebody, make sure that they understand just how simple and non-invasive the implementation would be.
And the benefits for their water rights in the long run.
Absolutely. Well, no, this could simplify things for everybody substantially. Anything else on metering? Any questions, comments?
I think it's actually required by Utah law that every diversion has a meter on it. Not about each wells or just ag diversion.
That at this point, that is just...
Nobody even forces it, but it is law.
John, you're frozen again. Maybe just turn off your
your
video.
Probably can't hear you.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. You're back. You could try just turning off your video.
Yeah, I think it's something besides that. But meanwhile,
we can't. You're muted now. Did I do that?
All right. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sue is right. It's on the books, for at least for certain applications, but so far it's being by many ignored. But I think that will change also. Anyway, we'll keep working on it.
Which means we may have a partner with the Division of Water Rights, even though they don't like to do enforcement.
Right. Any more on that?
Just it'd be nice to know if there's really metering available, money available, and if so, whether we can make something happen, and do we have any rough figures, like at this many households, what it would cost at this many households, hookups, and that's all. I mean, that's just wishful thinking.
Well, but what Ryan mentioned earlier is interesting, and I do believe it'll be a trend. States are becoming... Utah seems to be at least somewhat aware of the fact that if you're going to mandate something, you have to provide some financial support for making it happen. And of course,
my thoughts is if they're at the end of their fiscal budget and they still have surplus money they haven't gotten rid of, we might be able to present a pretty nice little option of a little community willing to try to do it, right?
Yeah, I'm just not sure we can do it in time for this fiscal cycle. But yes, it will happen again, I feel fairly certain. Brian?
Thank you, John. Yeah, it will happen again, but again, it might be worthwhile making the contact initially and building that relationship with our representatives and senator to give them that in their pocket, that they could be the model or present a model to the legislature rather than having it being driven down from the Wasatch Front. Thank you.
That's always a good thing. And you mentioned another name besides Dinkins, some person.
Logan. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, Logan Monson is our representative. He is out of Monticello. I've worked with him over the past few years. And also, I have a good relationship with Representative Albrecht, Carla Albrecht as well. So.
Okay. Well, and you're right. I think we should at least get our name in front of them.
I would suggest going on the website for the Colorado River Authority of Utah, and it will explain this monitoring program and this funding. There might be an application. I don't really know. And then we can educate ourselves a little bit before we go to Melissa or Mark or Marissa.
And Sue, my recollection is that Mark picked money early on for the Castle Creek Gauge and 14 others in the Green River, Colorado River Basin that he wanted gauges on or thought they'd learn a lot from, and that might be part of the same program. And then this is just some of the other funds that were left over. I don't quite know.
Yeah, you're right. They did. They hired an engineering firm to look at a whole gap analysis of where we need metering in the state of Utah. Yeah.
Where metering needs to be implemented in the state of Utah?
Yep. Where there are great gaps.
Yeah, we saw that. We had a copy of that last year or so.
Yep. But again, John, it's all in relationship to the Colorado River obligations and the compact.
Oh, yes. No, I recognize that, well, it's being driven by larger advice. All right. Well, again, this is going to be a pretty big topic also. My point was simply that I don't like to go in and ask for money until I'm really prepared. I don't want to flail in front of a board that is awarding grants. But if we can, I think Ryan's point is well taken, which is we can at least go to Mr. Dinkins or other people and explain who we are and what our plans are and what our hopes are, and at least they'll remember us.
Honey.
Looking for money. Yes, Pam? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just was going to say that it would be helpful if Egmont is willing to do so, start working on some kind of you've done that to some degree on, what the options possibly are and how much they would cost and how many lot owners, how that would shift things, just so that we have some of that hard information.
All the options? That would be extensive.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It would be up to you.
We would have to narrow it down to what's possible or reasonable for the town of Castle Valley. Yeah. Not everything will be suitable for this.
Right, and it's just a starting point for discussion with,
I would need some more information probably either from John or from Sarah as to.
And I would recommend that you work with the Division of Water Rights. I did some measuring, some metering up in Price, and it was very important that it was also tied into the Division of Water Rights' ability to look at how we're using our water. And so they have certain mechanisms that they use. Yeah.
As in the implementation of the program or the water metering itself?
How we share the data, I would say, but I'm not really positive. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark Stilton.
That's really the end user is the Division of Water Rights. It's their water.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
No, Mark Stilton told me that they would accept a metering system that basically measured pump time and had a pump flow. In other words, a pump flow on the well. A flow test on the well would yield a GPM number, and that would simply be multiplied by the amount of time the pump was running. That's complicated a bit by these modern variable delivery pumps, but Egmont has a solution for that also. But my first question when I just came up was to ask Mark, and he said that would be acceptable. They think that's a pretty good system, actually.
Well, they, where there's sedimentation, they found it's more accurate.
Probably. Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, inline meters in Castle Valley, half of them would get gummed up once a month. So,
and that's sure else, to make the property owner happy.
Yes. yes. All right, let's go on to next item, which is Castle Creek. This started, of course, as discussion of getting a gauge on Upper Castle Creek, but I figured we should generalize the topic just to sort of any issues pertaining to the creek. That is Pam. So what have you got to tell us, Pam?
Well, after the last meeting, I have suggested I reached out to Mark Stilson with the Colorado River Authority to see about whether there was funding and interest in putting a reestablishing a USGS gauge above the Castle Valley Academy diversion point below Castleton. And he said he would look into that. I haven't heard back from him, but I'm sure he's looking into that for us. He seems like he thought it's a great idea.
Can you say where it is again?
Say again?
Where is the gauge?
It's the old gauge is right below the last where you cross the creek below Castleton to go to where Jim Sam used to live, where the cemetery is, and it's about maybe a half a mile downstream from there at a really an accessible point where the creek comes back to the road. There's a cottonwood on the west side of the road that you can see where they went down for that. And we've looked at it with a couple of years ago. We did a tour of all these things and looked at the spot. It's a pretty stable piece of stretch of river creek right there.
And it was the site, there was a gauging station there. The Division of Water Rights did their little study in Castle Valley back in the early to mid-90s, and at the time they talked to USGS into installing a gauge there, and it was there, and they came back a few years later and took it out. So the site is kind of established.
There's about 20 years of data, I think, from that era,
right.
At least, yeah.
Well, thank you. I'll be eager to hear what Mark has to say. I know he's a great advocate for metering. So
he's an engineer. He wants data. He's got to answer questions.
Yeah. And I should just point out, too, that both the irrigation companies in Castle Valley, the one at the lower end of the Castle Valley Irrigation Company, as well as Castle Valley Inc., old Daystar, there is now metering on those two flumes, and that's publicly accessible if anybody wants to look at that. And they also installed a remote gauge in the pipe that delivers water from the Quakey Pond down to the Daystar property, to their fields. And that's located right by Fire Station 1. You can see it when we drop by there. So all that's accessible online. And I should...
That's fantastic, Pam.
Yeah. And as an aside, because we have done that, the two irrigation companies at our last distribution meeting in early February decided not, they want to dissolve the distribution system because they're not having the disputes that they did that were back in 2014 and before that caused them to ask the state to have the distribution system put in place. So they're on their own now, and I'm out of a job with the Division of Water Rights as the water commissioner. As a personal interest, I'll just keep looking at things down there.
Okay, that's why my hand is raised, because you made mention of that in some email, and I was going to ask about it today. I was curious as to why they dissolved that agreement, but you're indicating it was kind of a positive dissolution.
They're happy with the system now. And, you know, I was the, you know, kind of the objective observer to decide how to spurt the water. In recent years, we've had such low snowpack that there's been no reason to actually have to split the water. So so there's two things going on. One, that both companies are satisfied that nobody's trying to steal water, which was kind of the original complaints. the second reason is there's just, you know, we have such low snowpacks that there's no reason to adjust the water at the Quakey Pond, which is where I would do that.
All right, that sounds great. And we heard earlier about the health of cows.
Well, that's...
Go ahead, Dave.
The monitoring of those diversions, John, is just tremendous, because that's a major piece of the unknown as far as trying to quantify our water budget in the valley.
Oh, I agree, and I've been down there, and there's actually... It seems like there's a monumental maintenance chore just keeping the brush out of those things, but it's been done, and it looks like a very. That day we did the tour, we visited all those gauging sites, and they it seemed very well thought out. I'm sorry, out of a job, Pam, but it's
yeah,
creative destruction.
I would just add one more thing on Castle Creek. I've been in contact with Colton Lay from Mott, and he's still doing his measurements, taking over from Arnie Holtquist on that. And we keep trying to set up a time when Obi and me and Sarah can go out with him and see exactly where he's taking his samples and how he's doing it. And that's going to continue going forward, I gather, from Colton. That's part of his job description now.
Yeah, and I figured that. Arnie indicated that would continue. I'm glad to hear that, you know, Colton is going to follow through on it. The thing is, it ends up being a big gob of data, and I've been in the habit of going, I forget where the data is logged, but I've been downloading it and importing it into the Castle Valley Town database. I guess we'll just communicate with Colton about that going forward, staying the town maintaining access to the data or getting the data. So anything else on Castle Creek? All right, the next item is aquifer monitoring, UGS program. Sarah and Obi. Obi's not present.
I would say no advances, as far as I'm aware of.
What's that?
I'd say there's been no advances, as far as I'm aware of.
No, and you know, there's not going to be much. All that, in terms of the program, all that matters is if the town council renews the contract every year, and the UGS people come and do the twice annual samplings, and of course that we get the data and get it entered and so forth. It's mostly just staying on top of it and making sure that there was a time UGS did this monitoring years ago, then something happened, some ball got dropped, and no monitoring occurred for a couple of years, and then it got resumed, and has been in effect ever since. I don't anticipate a problem. It's an annual chore for the town council to renew the contract and make the payment. And of course, if there's aquifer issues that or water quality issues that come from the sample data, we'll discuss those, but this should be a fairly quiet topic. Any questions or comments on that?
They match 50% still, don't they, John?
Yes, we get a screaming deal, honestly, and it's good data to have. Because it enables us to see things changing before they change too much.
It also keeps UGS staff familiar with Castle Valley and coming here, and that's worked in our advantage over the years.
It certainly has. So anyway, we'll every month we'll just get a little update if there is one. There often will not be one, but again, I want to keep that particular topic in front of us.
There's a question. Do you know how much that contract is?
I want to say $3,000, but the town only pays half of it. But my information could be old. I have not paid much attention in recent times because it has been kind of an automatic renewal. I think the price went up slightly, not because the back end lab test fees went up, and that resulted in a higher cost to the town, but not a much higher cost. You'd have to get that information from Jocelyn.
Let's say UGS's inflation is trailing the general inflation.
Yes, it is. No, we have a very good friend in the UGS. We have for a decade or more, and we certainly should maintain that friendship. So Sarah, ask Jocelyn for that information.
Okay.
Because it's my memory of that could be old or flawed, both. So.
I recently saw it, but I don't remember where.
What's that?
I recently read it, but I don't remember where.
Okay.
I'll ask her and put it in a minute.
All right. Aquifer monitoring, the additional well. This basically pertains to the possibility. I'll back up a bit. The Combs study identified what they felt would be a very valuable place to have a seventh monitoring well, which was basically just south of where Schaefer Lane crosses Castle Creek. I don't think the town is or anytime soon is going to have the funding to drill such a well. The wells that are in Castle Valley now, the six wells we use, were drilled at UGS expense back in the early 2000s, and I don't think that kind of opportunity exists. But I'm aware of a well on lot 194, which is a lot at the very end of Schaefer, that was abandoned by the owner because he wanted to drill another well and see if he can get a well with less sand in it. He had sanding trouble with his first well. Anyway, so that well is there abandoned. We did use it for the water budget study, and I am going to approach him about possibly adding it as a seventh monitoring well, because it's the location is as close as we're likely to get to that location that Colm identified, and it's there. Now, the difference is, of course, that it's on a private land, on private property. And so we would need to get his permission for the UGS staff to come on twice a year and do their sampling chores. I guess the question I have is that it's an abandoned 6-inch well, and of course it's very easy to measure static water level, but to set it up for water chemistry sampling, as the other six are, would those wells are 6-inch wells, but they have a 2-inch piece of the PVC stuck down them and sand packed around the PVC. And they have a special top that can be locked and which enables them. They do this because for water chemistry sampling, they have to pump out the water in the well. They have to refresh the well three times, and it's a lot easier in a 2-inch tube than it is in a 6-inch tube. They use a hand pump, or I guess they said they finally got a pump that will run off a 12-volt truck battery. The point is that it's a special construction for monitoring well. And I'm not sure the owner of, I guess I'll have to ask, but I'm not sure how he's going to feel about, the process of making an official monitoring well out of that abandoned well. Maybe it's not a problem since it is abandoned, and the access. And those are the questions I have to ask. I guess what I'm wondering is, do we think it would be valuable enough if all we could do with it was measure the static water level?
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty interesting to know the static water level there, John. We might even be able to, over time, figure out if it is really attached to the Castle Creek pool or just more about the Valley Fill aquifer, but we don't really have much information out there.
in that neighborhood.
No, and what would you guess the distance is from that well to where home site? I would say in the neighborhood of 500 feet.
I would be in the same area there, 300 to 500 feet.
And I'm this particular lot owner has been very cooperative and helpful. He understands our purposes and has been willing to help. So I feel certain, nearly certain, he would allow at least level measurement twice a year. The bigger topic would be the refitting of the well for chemistry sampling.
And you might even approach that subject with them, that we try doing the sampling and see how that relationship goes. And we could also make it like a temporary thing to see if it's working out for him. I've dealt with him before, and I think he's the kind of guy who might like to have a contingency up front to see if it worked out.
Yeah, and I'll talk to Greg next week. Maybe they got equipment now where we're pumping is not such an arduous chore, and they won't care if it's 6-inch.
And you might actually, when I left the valley, I wondered if that was, Jocelyn may know, but I mean, we took out part of his gate to open up Schaefer Lane. I wondered what that relationship was like. I mean, there's a big concrete post, you know, steel post with the concrete pulled out of the ground. So I was hoping it was a positive relationship.
Yeah, no, again, no harm in asking, and I will ask. I just wanted to get some clarification on what the goal is.
Hopefully we haven't pissed them off lately.
No, I've been in touch with them in fairly recent times, and he was quite cordial, so I don't think there's...
Okay, well, that's, you know, John, for the Schaefer Lane right there, that's his property we're crossing.
Yes. I mean, during the current road construction.
Yes, and at his expense, he put up that gate there, I'm pretty sure. Might have been the fire district.
All right, well, I can say that I will contact him, and we'll find out.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, non-potable water for cisterns. Does everyone understand that topic? We talked about it last month at some length. It's in the water management plan. It's just the idea of being able to provide water to people with lots with poor wells or don't want to spend a ton of money to drill a poor well. I have some photographs of a system, a water dispensing system, in a town near to me here, but that means sharing my screen and I probably would lose Zoom again. I could probably email.
Is that the Beck? Doesn't the Beck do that?
The Beck does. I went down there the other day and the facility was locked. So maybe they only have certain hours. Theirs is right next to the river. This is Colburn, Colorado, which is 11 miles east of me. And it's just this gray metal box.
Are you sharing?
I'm not because I'm afraid of. I suppose I could try it. Of course, that means I have to figure out how to share. Here we go. Let's try it. I guess you need video first, don't you? Okay.
You do, but.
The host disabled participant screen sharing.
Try that. Let's load off participants.
All right. Can you see it?
Yes.
Okay. This is out at the rodeo grounds in Colburn, Colorado. And you'll see it's a little simple gray box. It's good. Can you see my cursor?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a hose fitting here for a typical garden hose for people that have, you know, 5-gallon jugs. And there's a 2-inch quick connect fitting here. Okay. And there's a close up of it showing those fittings. I mean, people just pull up with whatever containers and hoses they are using. And this is their choice. And this behind this little door right here is a place where they enter, you know, whatever, they pay for it, probably using an account number they maintain. But it's that simple, really. And here is a picture of someone using it. This someone is using the 2-inch connection to fill a 120-gallon stock tank. And again, you can imagine there's all kinds of variations. I'm going to stop sharing now unless anyone wants to see these photographs some more. Just wonder.
Well, it might be nice, John, if you sent those to Sarah and she could attach them to the minutes so people started to get an idea of, you know, what we're talking about. Try and keep rumors.
Yes, and I hope to get soon to get similar photos of the Beck facility. Theirs appears to be right next to the town water treatment plant. There's a big municipal-sized tank there. I'll find out more. The thing is, the Colburn water, that is attached to their, they have a treated water system for the town. And that water at that pump station is no doubt fed from that system. In other words, it's already treated.
Right.
Now, the Beck pumps their water right out of the Colorado and I think treats it at the facility. I guess what I'm getting at is that we had talked once upon a time about just having a well and a pump and a tank truck and delivering water, non-potable water to lots. I'm not sure we're going to be able to get away with that under given state standards and laws and rules and such. But I think we can also look at a system like what I just showed you, where we first have to identify a well we can use and have that. But if we have that, what kind of water we can legally provide and what it would take to provide it and how it would be delivered. And again, I feel like if we put in something like what I just showed you, that people could come fill their own stuff or some enterprising person would go into the delivery business. In other words, I think my thinking has evolved to the point where I would rule out the town doing any delivery, but simply having a facility, where people could get water.
Well, I would say that the blueprint of other communities doing that is certainly to not deliver.
It is. And I know for a fact that Beck is a similar facility to what I just showed you, where people bring their own containers and fill them. And again, it can be a couple of 5-gallon jugs, or it can be a 1,000-gallon, truck-mounted tank.
John, a few years back, Karen Nelson sent us a picture from Manco Springs, I'm pretty sure, down near Durango.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing something similar, but again, it was you pulled up and put your credit card in or had an account and got your money that way and filled your own tank and did your own delivery.
And the point is that the town's responsibility ends at the delivery facility. I guess that's the fundamental difference, and it's a difference I'm coming to think is.
And I have a feeling financially it may be the deal breaker in all of it. You see what I mean?
Yes. No, we have significant legal questions to answer, you know, legal and health requirements, and then again, we have to find a place to do this, a well.
Yeah.
But I think there would be. We would simplify the whole proposal by creating a facility such as what I just showed you, rather than trying to put delivery, add delivery to the mix. Because I like
it. Well, and the thing you just showed us there, John, potentially could be sold as a backup to the town of the fire department's water well, right? So they'd have another place to fill potentially in emergencies?
Yes, and that's when we start looking for wells, that will be any well that is identified for this purpose will probably have as a primary purpose serving the fire department. But again, more on that later. Any questions on what I showed you or what we've talked about from anybody? I'll take that as a no.
So it might be, so all of our examples are in Colorado, so I'm just curious if there's an example in Utah since we have different water laws, but I don't know if that's...
Yeah, no, not that I'm aware of, but again, yeah. I intend to have discussions with the people managing the facilities in Dubec and Colborne to find out what legal, how they set that up to comply with state law. But of course, again, Colborne's water is already treated.
Yeah.
It comes to that pump station treated. Dubec treats theirs at the station. But they're both treated. I don't really think, it's just a hunch, but I don't think the town of Castle Valley was going to be able to provide water that is not treated.
Right.
Brian?
Thank you, John. So, we did not have a question about this on the 2019 survey, but with, Pam's help, we did have a question, and your help as well, John. We did have a question on our most recent survey, and it was, do you support the town continuing research on options to provide residents whose lots produce little or no water and or poor quality water with, and then 5A was non-potable water, and 5B was potable water. So the results showed, and again, this was just for this year's survey, that, let's see, 5A, there were 173 residents who participated on that question, and there was 67.05% support for the town continuing research on options to provide residents whose lots produce little or no water or poor quality water. There were 57 or 32.95% of those survey results who said no to that question.
Okay, that's good to know. It sounds like there's enough people interested that we should pursue it.
I'd agree. 2/3.
And you know, sometimes I think sometimes the responses to these questions are because people see cost. And again, for any foreseeable future, this is all research. There will be little or no cost.
Yeah, that was support for researching it further. So if we can, as a committee, provide some more information, that will help direct what the residents are interested in doing. Thank you.
Right. And you know, anything we propose is going to have to go through the council. We are not able to spend money. That's their job. And again, then it's subject to a public process that addresses that. So, yes, we will continue to research it and discuss it. Any other questions or comments on that?
Egmont has a question.
Egmont, I see Egmont's hand.
Where would the water come from? What wells do you have in mind?
Well, I had talked years ago to the fire district about using the well on lot 13.
Very silty.
Well, it's become so. At the time, it was not. And at the time, they agreed not that we could use it, but that we could study using it, that we could continue pursuing the idea, and if we could got to the point of being having a specific proposal, they would then discuss that. They've since had silting or sanding problems. Another well I'm aware of, and this is 100% speculative, is a lot further up the valley. I believe it's lot 117, and the fellow who owns it has kind of cleaned up the lots, taken stuff off of it that was their junk and whatnot, and has told the fire department he'd make the well available for them. And again, I'm telling you all that I know, and it's the barest of outlines. But again, I think if that is true, and to some degree, then he could be approached about the possibility of this. My understanding is he's not going to live in the lot. It's almost a public service that he bought the lot and refreshed it and is now making the well available to the fire district.
It, And potentially he could be compensated for the service. So
yeah, and I guess the final option is to drill a well somewhere. But again, this is all, it's a question we have to answer first, but we're not, at the moment, we're kind of putting the cart before the horse. But those are the two ideas that exist at the moment.
And if we were drilling a new well from scratch, Egmont, right above my place, which has really good water, I think there's a way to get out to the BLM without Utah Open Lands control, and there's a power pole close by. So, you know, that's a potential spot too. It's also an attractive spot from the standpoint of being right next to Castle Valley Drive and being able to provide fire protection further down the road, like at every cross street, have a fire hydrant, right? So, and that's definitely the part of the valley where you can get that kind of water. Of course, everybody else in the valley is going to want to make sure it doesn't impact them, but, you know, I don't really think it will there, given the history of my well.
No, the well on Dave's lot, when Castle Valley was still a big ranch, was pumping 1,600 gallons a minute all day.
And it's 375 feet deep, cased to 275, and the water level's at 86. So when they were pumping with the 600 horsepower pump, drawdown was happening in a big way. It's also an example of why we can't allow any individual lot owner in our new community to do huge drawdown, you know, huge pumping, because they will have local drawdown.
Yes, and we're sure to find out about more of this in the future. Anyway, I don't know if I answered your question, Egmont, but those are the two wells that at least have been identified as possibilities. We'll see what else we come up with. Any more questions on that? All right. Next item is the water Grand County Watershed Protection Overlay District. OBIE is not present. Unless someone else has something to say about it, we'll just skip it. I guess that means we'll skip it. I guess I should ask if everybody, we discussed this some last month, but everybody's familiar with what the WCWPOD is, GCWPOD. It's a district the county's created for watershed protection, and when they first created it, Castle Valley was left out, which, given the history of some other things in Grand County, it was just ridiculous. And so OBIE went back and got us put in. And I think it's still in the works as to how, what that's going to mean in terms of protection. But, you know, Moab, the aquifer that supplies Moab is also a sole source designated aquifer. There are several things in common. The point is we should definitely pursue this. A lot of our goals for watershed protection be accomplished by this district, if we're in it and the protections that are written into it apply to us properly. So OBIE will report.
I kind of missed that. Did you say that we're not currently in it, or that
we were when it was first formed, we were not. And, okay. And again, given our history with the Grand County Water Conservancy District, now the GWSSA and Ken's Lake and all that, it was, never mind. The point is it was a gross oversight. OBIE went back to them. OBIE's on that planning commission or whatever is responsible for forming this. Went back and said, you got to put Castle Valley in, and they did. But again, the details are still being worked out. The point is I think we should pursue this vigorously because, again, many of the goals we have for watershed protection would be accomplished by this district and our inclusion in it. So
absolutely, John.
Let's leave it for OBIE to report on.
We argued for the county, it's better for them to include us because then it shows consistency in the sole source aquifers getting protective, and it's not cherry picking.
Exactly. That you couldn't be more observant about that. But this is, I'm not sure what the county thinks these days based on my reading the paper once a week.
Let's just say it's
anyway.
Schizophrenic.
All right, so
we
we'll,
are included, right? I think you said we were included, but
we are included, aren't we? You're just saying that the details for how it applies are still included.
Yeah, they are, you know, yes, Castle Valley is now included, okay. But the district is still being formed and fleshed out.
Okay.
Even at the Grand County level. I mean, even at, so it's a work in progress, but at least we're in the work. So. All right, the final item is Division of Water Rights appropriations policy for Castle Valley. This kind of harkens back to what we were discussing at the beginning of the meeting about Cash's comments at the last MOP meeting, but more specifically about what we might do with the information provided by the Water Budget Study in terms of limiting or controlling appropriations in Castle Valley. This is your topic, Dave, so take it away.
Well, okay. I think we've got a few things here. I definitely agree that one of the things maybe we do first on this whole topic is background, is identify how much undeveloped private property outside of the town of Castle Valley there actually is in the watershed. It would also be interesting to look at, like, of the undeveloped, what could be developed and to what level. So if the ranch up in Castleton got turned into ranchettes or something, is that possible? Porcupine Ranch, is that possible? Before we don't necessarily go through the trouble to do this, I also heard Cash say, because I've wondered for a long time just how much threat we really face outside as long as appropriations are kept to 6 acre feet or 2 acre feet in Willow Basin. I do like the idea of 2 acre feet over the whole basin. I do think it's defensible given what we've found out. I think the question of whether it's politically worth the effort is another question. And I think the only way to honestly answer that is look at what we face from development. Now, I'm thinking of traditional development on the private lands, and there's very little sitla left. The only sitla left is in the proposal for under canvas. So Cash's comments about the public lands during that meeting, and do not forget the federal land, was interesting to me. And I guess the ramifications of that comment we also probably ought to consider. I think the part of Castle Valley that's in the BLM's hands that came to us in the land swap, and Sue may be able to comment on this too, I think that's fairly secure because that's all in the Colorado River Management Corridor.
I
think the
land
outside of that area in the federal portfolio probably are a little bit more, you know, in the category of what could be sold off if the government ever got into that, which Mike Lee might like, but I think might be hard to pull forward. So that's kind of my assessment of it. I mean, what are we really facing in private property out there that's undeveloped?
Well, that is a good question, and that is the question. Cash pointed out in his comments correctly that we already have several appropriations policies in place. And in fact, in his knowledge, more than any other town in his jurisdiction. There's a policy that there's no new appropriations allowed in Willow Basin. Only small appropriations are allowed in the lower valley. And this especially pertains to the BLM land within town boundaries, that anybody within town boundaries seeking water rights has to get them from the town. So there really is a distinct limit to how much could occur in the way of new appropriations. But like you're saying, how much, where is that? What is that number?
Yeah, and like if Day, I mean, let's face it, if Daystar was developed and turned into houses, there'd be a lot more houses, but there'd be a lot less use of water if they weren't growing alfalfa, right?
Yeah, a lot less agriculture. So, I do think that whatever we do, we should proceed carefully. I don't want to jeopardize the policies already in place. Especially the one that says that anyone within town boundaries has to get their water from the town. Cash indicated that's fairly rare. And again, I think that's a really critical one for us.
So I know on the county recorder's website, you can go on there. Hopefully I can do that from Europe and look at the different properties and see if there's like a house. But I suppose on the Division of Water Rights website, you can do that and see whether there's a well or not, right? And whether...
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm trying to catch up right now, but by the next meeting, I'll try to go on there and look at that and see if I can get an idea and start narrowing down. Are we talking about, you know, how much land and how much acre feet are we really talking, right?
Yes. And then that's the question to be answered first.
Okay. I'm with you.
Any questions or comments on that?
I do have a comment. So I read our UGS report, and it's hard for us to imagine, but sometimes growing alfalfa is better for us because it actually recharges the aquifer in houses. And so we want to think about how we can protect our agricultural areas too, because that's really was one of the inputs into our aquifer is inefficient water use, which is hard for us to get our head around, but
You're absolutely right, Sue.
Yeah. Because I start thinking about how can we efficiently use water, but we might want to be inefficient in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think for wildlife, the inefficiencies are really important.
Yeah. And so, Dave, you know this as well as I do. A lot of the land is protected by conservation easements, which would prohibit more straws into our aquifer. And so that should be taken into consideration in your look.
Absolutely. And Sue, you should know at one time Daystar or Castle Valley Inc. was interested in pursuing an agricultural easement, which I think would be a great thing. Where we ran into problems was there's a boundary dispute between Castle Valley and the town and them that has to be sorted before really anything could be done, and that's unfortunate, but they have houses on town lots, our property. I think it's possible to sort it, but it gets to another layer of complexity that at the time we didn't work through. They had a changeover in their administration, and there wasn't the interest again, but that could be reviewed again. Wendy Fisher at Utah Open Lands was interested in doing the easement at the time.
Yeah, again, we have to start with having some fairly well-sharpened concept of just how much more demand there could be made on the aquifer from developmental land that is not currently developed. And again, my sense of it is there's not much of it, but I could be wrong.
No.
And, you know, it's let's remember that the town's large water rights were all derived from the inefficient use of water. It was that Castle Valley used to be a wall-to-wall alfalfa swamp. And they got approved appropriations and perfected water rights for a very large amount. And one of our challenges is going to be able to demonstrate some. And this is where we're back to banking and leasing. There's no way that residential development in Castle Valley is ever going to come close to what was consumed for that ranch. Now, of course, conditions have changed and the supply may be less, but there's still a considerable buffer there. But it all stems from what Sue calls inefficient use.
No, we definitely Sue makes a great point, because if that water was just staying in Castle Creek and running through, it would run through a vast majority of it, whereas slowing it down and allowing it to disperse is keeping it in the aquifer and probably, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Without question, a major input.
This is a little bit off subject, but one of the things I know the town or the city of Moab was looking at is how to recharge our aquifer, because they're in much more dire situations than the town of Castle Valley.
Where's that?
Moab.
Okay.
Mark Stilton and I and some of the county commissioners that shall remain nameless. No. We're looking at places to, how can we recharge the Moab aquifer? That might be something this committee wants to think about in the future. I don't think we're in the place that Moab is.
No, it's a good point, though, and what Colton Lay and Pam have been working on with slowing water in Placer Creek and things like that all plays into it, too, so we should be open to the whole subject.
All right, well, we're 2 minutes from being 2 hours into this meeting. I think it's been substantive. Any more questions or comments about anything? All right. Do we have to, like, move and vote on adjournment, or can we just say we're adjourned? I've never understood.
No, I make a motion to adjourn.
Okay. Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay, well, thank you all.
No, give her a time. What time do you adjourn it? Let's do this. We're going to have everybody watching us, John. Let's do this right.
My clock says 10:59. Yes,
hey,
I will no doubt need coaching to move from the era of the WAC meeting informally to being an official committee. So whenever I slip, please point it out.
Dave, what time does your clock say?
Right about that, too. It says, but I mean, here it's 6:59.